Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland.
Welcome to Rational in Portland. I'm your host, Kristen. I'm here in the studio with Karen Chiray from the, she has a business in the Stadium Hood neighborhood. And we've heard a little bit from people who live there, from people who care about that neighborhood. And Karen's one of the business owners, and she's here to talk about what it's like to run a business in Northwest Portland. Welcome, Karen. Thanks for being on.
Oh, thank you.
So when we were off air, right before we started, we talked a little bit about the history of your business. Can you just run us through the timeline here? Like, when did you open? What kind of business do you run? Just sort of basics.
Sure. So back in 2019, my husband and I, he was my boyfriend at the time, we had an opportunity.
I'm going to scoot your mic closer.
Oh, sorry.
You're right.
We had an opportunity to open a convenience store, which was my husband's goal. And so there was a vacant property at 20th and Burnside. It used to be a flower shop. And then our brother-in-law, who actually owns the building, had his food cart there as well. And then it just sat vacant for years. And so they said, well, you can try to open your store. And so both of us never had owned a business. And so I ended up starting our LLC, and my husband took time off work to start building the store, because it was basically just a shell. There was like garbage and trash and asbestos and all that stuff inside. There was no floor. The plumbing was gone, electrical, all that stuff. We didn't have the money to hire an architect, and so I became the architect and drew all the plans to get all of our permits. And
that's a hard process, right? The permitting process in the city of Portland, it's very difficult.
Both he and I had gone down and spoke to the BDS people,
Bureau of Development Services.
Yes. Yeah. And so like he'd take the plans there and they'd say, oh no, that's not right. You need to take it back to your architect. And so he took it back to me. And so we'd make little tweaks and stuff. And eventually, we got the permission to, start building. So, but we had spent weeks and on the weekends, cleaning it out and, bagging up asbestos, and we had to label it and all that stuff and take it out to the dump. So he was building it. I was working my full-time job. And then help either after my job or on the weekends. We did hire a contractor, a plumbing contractor, an electrician that helped with that. But we basically were, putting the walls up. I did all the lighting in the store. We did a little bit of plumbing, but jackhammering and all that stuff, it was a lot of work. And
how long did it take you?
It took probably, so we started construction in, I would say, December, and then we were finally done around May. So it took like 5 or 6 months.
Yeah. That seems fast based on what you had to do, what you did.
Yeah. So, but like
a lot of work.
Yeah.
In a compressed amount of time.
Yeah. And so, because we were there, because now we were like getting the equipment in, which we bought all of our own equipment, like soda machine and coolers and all that stuff. We actually got a great deal on our walk-in. We got it for $1,000 and then had a guy that my husband knew of. Build it for us. And so it just kind of all came together. And then my husband had applied for like tobacco license and lottery, MoneyGram. We have Amazon Locker. We tried to get the Red Box and stuff, but I guess they weren't giving out new Red Boxes. And so he did all of that. Eventually, we got our first shipment of groceries and cigarettes, and it was like the bare minimum because, like I said, my husband had saved up money. He had saved up $50,000 by living in his car.
Wow.
Yeah, Ubering and donating plasma. Yes, and he did that for years. Yes, and so, and then I, because I was a single parent.
He's literally sacrificing himself on every level to make this happen.
Exactly.
That's how badly he wanted this.
Yes. Yep. And so, and I wanted to be super supportive. So I like took out a loan and I got credit cards and we maxed out our credit cards. And
so scary.
Yeah.
So much pressure.
Yeah. So he was, he said that he, because he didn't know how successful we would be, that he'd put the business under his name initially. And that way, if it did fail, that I wouldn't be like caught up in that, the failure, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And so anyway, my kids were in their teens, later teens and stuff. And so eventually we ended up like moving into the store to...
You and the children?
No, me and my boyfriend slash husband.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And so my kids were... we're now staying with their dad.
Okay.
And because I had them for, well, since they were babies. Wow. They were living with me. And so he took them on. And then eventually I ended up selling my house. And we just lived in the store because we didn't want to go back and forth commuting, you know, from where we lived to the store. And we were just there all the time, right?
Yeah. And when you're running that kind of, maybe a lot of people don't know this, but when you're running that kind of an operation, you are there all the time.
Yes.
Even if you have employees, you're on the phone all the time. You're constantly involved. It involves a lot of turnover. It involves a lot of, you're doing everything. You're doing HR, you're doing security, you're doing inventory, you're doing the books, it's a crazy amount of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. We didn't have employees initially just because we couldn't afford
them.
Yeah,
you wouldn't. Yeah.
You know,
it's like, you. You're the people.
Yeah. So my husband, he would open the store and work the store. And then after my job, I would come and then work the night shift, give him a break, and then we'd like close the store together. And it was like that for a few years. And so, so we're living in the storage and, in the store just on a blow up mattress. And, obviously we have enough groceries, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
We were able to,
that's the good news.
You know, we had a kitchen cause our store has a deli. We've always had a deli in there. And, anyway, and so, it just like things happened like right away, you know, like we would have the shoplifters and luckily we didn't have,
you expect all that?
I mean, we did, but, and my husband, he worked at 7-Eleven convenience store, before he got into construction. So he's in construction, right? He's been doing that for like 10 years. But before that, he was working convenience stores. And so he had mentors that were telling him, hey, you can open a convenience store. You know, they're essential business, makes great money, you know, blah, 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 right? And so that's what inspired him to do it, is because he had these mentors. And so I forgot where I was going.
Oh, I'm sorry. Things that happened right away, including shoplifters.
Yeah. So he had dealt with that when he worked at 7-Eleven. And so we expected it to happen here. But I didn't expect, like, I would think that if we caught somebody shoplifting, that they would just, like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, here you go, and then just walk out, right? I always want to catch them, like, before they leave, just because then, you know, it's just basically, don't come back to my store, you know? And, but over the years of doing that, or, and, or not catching them and then finding out later, right? Then there becomes, like, no data to say that this area is, like, a high crime area. And and so
that's true.
Yeah.
So, and that's what police need for patrols and
exactly.
Oh, some, just some kind of reason for paying attention.
Right. And so, eventually my husband went back to construction, and then I ended up managing and renting the store, and we got employees, and now I have a wonderful crew.
Okay, because that's hard to find.
Crew. Yes.
That's really good.
Yeah, we've been, well, we had our fair share of people.
I bet. I bet you learn all about who to hire, who not to hire, how fast to fire people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, and like, if we don't have an employee, then I end up working.
Right. Know, yes, like you would. Right.
Yeah.
It's so, you.
Yeah. Yeah, and
you're the sick day. You're the backup.
Right. And not that I mind. I mean, I love to work. I love to stay busy, you know, and I love our store too. Like, it's fun, you know, and I love the customer. We have so many regular customers that come in that are
it's so thrilling that your husband realized this dream.
Yes.
And I think it's very sweet that you help propel this forward into something that's real.
Well, he was quite shocked, actually.
You two built together.
He just didn't think that I would last.
Yeah, I don't think most people would.
You know what I mean?
But, yes, I do.
And so
it's an incredible story.
Because, you know, here I was with a career single mom living in a very nice house, you know, and I did
it's a lot to give
many
up.
Things, you know, and then, yeah. And
it's
then
a big change.
Now I'm in the store, living in the store and, you know, running the store and stuff. But I love it. Like I really do, you know, and I love being a part of the community also, you know, but it's just the one-offs that come into the store that, you know, it's like, how do we stop them? How do we tell them that it's not okay what they're doing?
You said when we were off air that you had over 500 people.
Yes.
Who've committed crimes in or outside of your store.
Yep. So, and I have them
that you have on a camera.
On my phone, on, you know, my computer, the pictures of these people.
And what period of time are we talking about?
Since day one. So 4 years. Yeah, it's been 4 years now. So.
So it's over 100 people a year.
Yes. Yeah.
And can you talk about, what's the worst thing that's, I mean, can you name a worst thing that happened at your store?
Well, there's a couple though. I think the ones are the fires. Like we've literally had 5 intentional fires. So not like just homeless people, you know, lighting little fires.
Or cooking or something.
Right. But this was like purposefully trying to set our building on fire by sticking newspaper up the siding and lighting it on fire, you know, or getting boxes and putting it up against the building and lighting it on fire, you know, or lighting a garbage can on fire, or, you know, it's just like, that's intentional, you know, there was motive right there.
What was were any of these people arrested?
Nope,
or
none of them.
And were you able to catch any of this in the act and call police?
No.
So it was all, you saw it all after the fact.
Yeah.
On video.
Well, no, like the first fire, we knew it well, because I could smell, like I can smell the smoke, right? You can smell the smoke when it's happening.
Oh, so you came out and the person was gone?
Yeah. Well, because we had lived there. So the first fire.
Yeah, you were living there.
Yeah, the first fire. We knew because I could smell the smoke, but it wasn't our smoke from our fire. It was from the fire at the pizza shop up the street from us.
Because that was set fire too.
Yeah, and that was it was big. It was kind of a large fire, and so yeah. And then the other ones, like I could be inside and smell the fire. And so now I'm like, I'm very sensitive whenever I smell.
Sure.
Like
it's really scary. Fire, yeah, you don't want to be trapped stuff. In a burning building.
Exactly. You know, like I have a very good sense of smell, you know? So, yeah, anything like that. I'm like always like the church fire that was, that big church fire that we had in, the Southwest,
downtown.
Yeah. It was like right down.
I think the whole thing burned down, didn't it?
Yeah. But I smelled that fire when it first started.
And it was it caused by a homeless person?
You know, I don't remember.
But yeah, yes, that the whole thing was destroyed.
Yeah, it was a huge fire. So, but that's why whenever I smell smoke, it scares me because I'm like, what's burning, you know?
Are you comfortable saying the name of your store?
Oh yeah. It's called Stadium Superette.
Stadium Superette.
Yeah.
And there are other convenience stores around you. Do you know the owners of those stores and do you all compare notes and talk about?
Well, I don't personally know the owners, but no. I mean, like I go to the store that's kitty corner across the street or across from, the stadium. Like if I were to have a shoplifter come in and then we didn't catch them and then they left. Right. And so I'd go over there to see if they potentially came into their store, you know, cause eventually they're going to hit all the stores. Right. And see what they can get away with.
Yeah. So it makes sense to work together sometimes to
and so
figure that out.
I feel like we should be more cohesive. Everybody. Things, you know what I mean?
It should
Cause like, these people are criminals. They're committing crimes. And regardless of how much they took or what they took or whatever, it's still a crime, you know? And the fact that they get away with it is it's hurtful, you know? Cause like I have to abide by all these laws and rules and regulations and stuff. And then they just go and do whatever it is that they want. And I think that that's why we have so much crime right now is because there isn't consequences. There's not enough police to arrest all these people or catch all these people, you know?
And so, even if there were, there's no jail space. I mean,
yeah,
they don't want jail space. They don't want to, we've got what, 250 jail beds that go unused in Multnomah County that we don't want to open up because we think it, I don't know, the rationale is, I guess they think it decreases crime to not have jail beds. I don't really know what the ideology is, but it's, where do you put them, really? I mean, how many times do they have, what kinds of crimes, terrible crimes do they have to commit to actually be jailed?
Yeah, but there's other consequences, though, and I don't think that people really, like, look outside the box.
Yeah.
You know, so besides jail, there's community service.
Sure.
There's monitoring.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so there's other ways that these criminals could, you know.
There are consequences.
Have penance, you know.
Restitution.
Right. And so, yeah, it's kind of.
But you're not seeing any of that really either.
In our situation, no.
I mean, how many people would you say have committed crimes against your store who have actually been arrested and gone through some kind of process?
One person.
One.
One person.
I really did not. I did not expect you to say.
Literally,
I expected more than one.
No, one person.
Why is that? Is it because they're so hard to catch? Wait, is it because they're there and gone so quickly? Like, why is this?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you must know who the repeat offenders are, probably, right? Like, you probably have a repeat offenders, right?
Yeah.
And you know who they are, and you've probably, like, trespassed them or whatever. You've got a picture of them up.
Yep. Yeah. We have our wall of shame. I have, right. I have 1, 2, 3, 4. I have 7 like large poster size with 90 people on each.
Wow.
Of those things. So, 'cause some of them are repeat people, you know.
What is the issue here? Is it because are they in and out so quickly? Like, what is it? I mean, I guess, you know, you try to call 911 and you're put on hold. I mean, that's part of the problem, right? With Bureau of Emergency Communications, that sort of crisis. It's very difficult to get a hold of somebody at 911 quickly.
Yeah.
Are you working with the neighborhood resource team and are they helpful?
No, I'm not working with them.
Yeah.
I mean, we just now, like in the last month, started to call the police when we have a shoplifter. Normally we try to stop them before they leave the store.
Right. But like you said, then they don't have the data to patrol and all the other things.
And so that's why we started to report it.
And are you seeing a response?
They do show up for the most part. They're taking a report and I submit my camera footage of them.
Good.
You know, shoplifting. Good. And stuff,
but that's just in the past month or so.
Yeah.
So it might take a while to get all that through the pipeline, maybe.
Yeah. So, and actually I take that back.
Okay.
There's been 2 people.
2.
But the second person, I don't think she went to court because nobody ever contacted us after the fact. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
You don't know what the resolution that was.
Yeah. And so we did have a burglary. It was our second burglary last year, September. And the guy broke into our store and took a whole bunch of vapes and scratch tickets and like just different stuff. Well, he had hurt himself coming into the store. And so there was literally blood everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a horrible crime scene. And I got a call from our security company right away, like right when he broke into the store.
On glass or something?
I think it was when he was coming in, he tripped and he hit his head on the edge of like a
counter or something.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
And head wounds are really messy.
Yeah. And so, so security people called me. I looked at the camera. I'm like, oh yeah, there's a guy in there right now. Call police. Right. And so I get there within 10 minutes of the guy leaving. So he was still in while I was getting ready. And then I get there and of course he's already gone and product is on the ground, you know, the window's busted and I go inside and I see all this blood in there and still no police. Because by then, like, it has been 10, 15 minutes now, right? Actually, no, it was about 10, 15 minutes. And no, it's been 20 minutes since they were supposed to call police, right?
And still security company.
Yeah, and so still no police. And
is this, like, part of your alarm system?
Yeah. Yeah, so we have multiple we have so many cameras in our store, like.
You would need to.
Literally. Yeah. And even outside, too. We have so many outside. And so anyway, I ended up calling some people that I knew live nearby in some apartments to see if they can stay with the store while I go look for the guy because police still weren't there, right? And he couldn't have gotten too far, you know, because he had like garbage bags filled with stuff, right? And so I was going to go look for him. And so it took a while. So 2 of my kids that work at the store, and then another, local friend of mine, they had come over and when they got there, still no police, right? This was like now 40 minutes after the guy had left, still no police. So I went and drove around looking for the guy. I came back. And this was now over an hour and still no police showed up. And so actually I had called 911 because I had passed by a business that had a whole bunch of people doing drugs And so I'd called to report the drugs.
You mean outside of the business?
Yeah, outside the business. And because I kind of like protect our neighborhood too, right? And so I reported that. And I'm like, by the way, do you know if somebody's coming to my burglary? And so the guy was like, oh, they'll get there when they can. And I'm like, oh, okay. Nice. And so I go back to the store because then now I'm going to go on foot. So I go on foot. And,
I mean, presumably, I don't know. They had other stuff in the queue that they had to get to before.
I guess so, but they said that they were on their way to take care of the people doing the drugs, but just not my burglary.
I don't understand.
Yeah. And so,
yeah, that's crazy.
So I started walking down Burnside and I went to different camps. And I had the guy's picture, right? So I was like showing people.
Because it's not in progress. I'm still like, anyway, I'm sorry. It doesn't matter. Yeah. So you're showing, and you know he's somewhere.
Yeah.
Close by.
He has to be.
Because he's burdened with all this stuff, and he probably didn't throw it into a vehicle and peel out of there.
Right.
He's bleeding, right?
Yeah.
So he's injured.
Yeah. It's, so I had called.
Easy to identify.
I called some emergency rooms too to see if potentially he went to the emergency room, you know, and they can only tell me so much. But, you know, I said, hey, this guy broke into my store and he's bleeding. And so potentially he went there, you know, and they really couldn't tell me that much. But then I went to like Central City Concern and, you know, these different homeless places to see if he was there. And I talked to homeless people along the way. I went all the way from our store on 20th and Burnside to the Burnside Bridge.
Wow.
That's how far I walked. And then, but then I was like, I'm like, I'm not done looking.
Wow.
You know? And so I walked and found some people. And I'm like, where would somebody go if they were injured? And they said, this place that's by the train tracks, I forget the name of the business that's right there. It's another like homeless
services.
Yeah. And so this one guy, super nice guy, he actually walked with me there because he had to go there anyway. And so we walked there together and I showed the picture and they said no. And so so by the train tracks, I walked all the way back to my store, still no police. and then right when I was getting like to my store is when I finally got the call from one of my kids that the police finally showed up. So this was like 2 hours later that they finally showed up. And so I go there, I talk to the officer, and he writes the report. I asked if they can get FED, which is the Forensics Evidence Division, to come out and, you know, either prints or
the blood,
you know? And so, so he did. And, there was, some burglar tools that were outside. So he collected that evidence. But then I had to call Rapid Response to come and clean up.
Yeah.
All the blood everywhere, you know, cause it was a biohazard.
Did you know to do that or did they tell you to do that? Cause I wouldn't know to do that.
I think he referred
okay.
it.
That's helpful.
Yes. Very helpful. And,
I would have just been putting some gloves on and.
Well, I potentially too, but.
Of course you would have. Yeah. No, of course that, given everything that you do and have done to keep this thing, the wheels on your business, of course you would have been doing that. But I mean, that's the kind of thing that would occur to a business owner that just you, I wouldn't know that that would be a resource. So that's good to know.
Yeah.
And they came and helped with that.
Yeah. So they cleaned it up. By then I was still out looking for the guy too.
Yeah.
I'm persistent. I don't want to give up, you know, because these people need to
be caught.
So
now it's what, 3 hours?
Yeah.
And 4 hours later.
So anyway, but then I was like, I guess, you know, we're opening the store. I had my glass guy come board up the window because he didn't have the glass at that time to replace it.
Boy, that's got to be a booming business in Portland, Oregon, doesn't it?
Oh.
Plywood and glass?
Yes. Yeah. And my
glass guy. It's the one industry you should go into here.
Yeah. Like our front door was recently broken by somebody throwing a rock at it. And so he said that he had to order the glass because he ran out.
Yeah, I believe it.
It's like, that's sad, you know? So I made a poster of the guy, a wanted poster, and posted it on the front of my door of the store and said that, you know, I'll pay $200 for any information leading up to the guy's arrest. And that same night, somebody's like, I know where he's at. And so, but I didn't know until like the next morning that happened. And so they actually drew a map of where he was at and let me know. And,
wow.
Yeah. And so my husband and I,
the reward was smart.
Yeah. My husband and I went over there. Oh, so I forgot to tell you. So Friday night, because it happened on a Friday, right? So Friday night, my husband and I are driving around still trying to look for the guy. And we see people selling our stuff on the side
that
of the road.
Fast.
Yep. Yep. They're selling our stuff. Oh, and so we get out of our car.
It's your inventory. Yep. Like, this is precious to you.
Yeah. So we get out of the car and walk over there. And I told my husband, I'm like, let me talk, you know? I'm like, so I casually, I'm like, oh, you got my favorite vapes, you know? Because they had vapes there, right? And so, anyway, I was like, oh, you got my favorite vapes. I'm like, oh, can you get more of these? You know, and my husband ended up paying $50 to get our stuff back, right? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, the guy, he seemed pretty like out of it and stuff because he has this huge head injury, you know? And apparently,
you're so brave.
These people, like, so much has happened to us.
Yeah.
That, like,
this is nothing. I know.
There's nothing.
Asking people.
There's nothing. I have been assaulted by shoplifters, like punched in the head 3 times by shoplifters, by men, you know, but they didn't knock me down. I still went after them, you know, and I know it's not safe. And the police, like, you shouldn't do that, you know, but it's like, it's our baby. Like, it's our store, you know, and at some point, It gets to the fact that, you know, because people are like, oh, what if you get killed, you know, and it's like, then maybe that's what needs to happen to have somebody realize that this is not right, you know, and I don't want to think like that, you know, I don't want to die.
Isn't it crazy?
And stuff, but
what just came out of your mouth is crazy.
Yeah. But that's like, that's where I'm at this point, you know, it's like.
And I don't. I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't disagree with you that might be the one thing that would cause somebody to pay attention to this.
Yep. So, because we don't feel safe. I mean, my employees, they don't feel safe.
Of course you don't. Of course they don't. Because they're not. Because you're not.
Yep.
Okay. I'm sorry. So continue. So they said, hey, this guy has a head injury.
Yeah.
And you buy your inventory back from this group of people.
Right. And I asked him, I'm like, oh, do you think you can get more? And they're like, oh, yeah. He said that he was going to get more later. And we asked, like, oh, where'd you meet up with this guy? Oh, he was at the library, the downtown library.
Of course he was.
That everybody hangs out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we drive over there, and we had called police. I had called police to say,
hey, we're on our way here to deal with this.
This is what's happening. Yeah. You know, we just bought our inventory from, not all of it, obviously, but.
And did they say, don't do that or?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
No. And so they called me back, and by then we were over at the library and trying to see if we could find this guy there, and we didn't see him there. And so we ended up driving around a little bit more. So we go to the McDonald's that's on Burnside.
Yeah.
And
that you can't go in anymore. The drive-thru is the only thing that's open.
And no, they opened the
store?
Now. Yeah.
Did they? When did that happen?
It's been months now that they did that.
But it was closed for years,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. But now it's open.
Why do you think they opened it? Because it doesn't feel like things are better.
It's not. It's not. I don't know what
surprises me that they opened that dining room.
Yeah.
Seems like nothing good can come of that, but okay. I mean, I guess, okay, good. I guess it's open.
Yeah. So anyway, when we were walking around there, guess what I see? But
that's another hotspot.
An empty box of
your stuff. Okay.
So I'm like,
and it was one of the boxes he took from the store.
Yeah. And we're the only ones in our area that sell this particular vape because we got it from a company on the East Coast. So nobody else has this. So I know for a fact that that was yours.
Yeah. Right?
And so I picked it up. I have gloves in my car. So I just picked it up and then put it in a baggie and as like evidence. Right. And so anyway, so then the next morning is when I get a call from my cashier saying, hey, these people left a note saying the guy is at this place right now. And so we drive over there and he was at the camp, the very first camp that I stopped at on my way looking for him.
And the map was right. It took you there.
Yep. So anyway, and he was
sleeping. What did you do?
Well, he was sleeping. And so I took some pictures and stuff because like I wanted proof, right?
And did you see your stuff scattered around?
No, we didn't go up to him. We kind of stayed back and called police and said, hey, the guy that broke into our store is here at this camp sleeping and please come arrest him, right? And so we had to wait like 20, 25 minutes and police finally came. Not the officer that took the report, just different officers, right? And so they had to verify it was him before they can even approach him.
You had all the pictures, I'm assuming like the video or you could just say, here you go.
Yes.
Just...
But they had to check with their people. They didn't really want to hear from us. We had to actually stand far away, not even be in the area.
They had to wait to hear from
somebody.
The precinct or something
like the flyer, I think that went out. Their official.
Okay.
And so finally, eventually they went over there, got him up and took him in the patrol car, right? And took him away. So we thought, oh, great. He's getting arrested, right? And so I found out later that night, he got out.
Yes.
He got out because the
it's totally consistent with
the
what
report wasn't
I've heard
finalized, and they didn't send me the link to submit all the video and pictures, and so they couldn't verify if it was him, and so I had called the DA that Monday because this was Saturday, right? So I'd called the DA on Monday, and said, you know, hey, what's going on? And actually, no, he called me. He ended up calling me. And he said, we didn't have enough to hold him. We need the video and photo evidence. And the officer went to training. And so he couldn't send me the link right away. And
oh my gosh.
Like, it took days before I got the link to upload. Like I had multiple video footage and stuff, right? And, but then that morning too, as I was going to our store, I stopped at the camp because the officers that were there didn't take any evidence. Like they didn't look around for evidence. They didn't take any evidence and stuff. And so when I went there, I was like, gosh,
I'm going to look for my stuff.
There's my vapes. There's some of my vape boxes, right?
That's amazing that any of it was there.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That it hadn't been sold, that it hadn't been sold by somebody else.
Well, he probably used it though. Like he used some of it, right?
Sure. Well, sure.
But also still, right there was a needle, a used needle, you know. I found the shoe that he was wearing that had blood on it, you know. The bag that he brought it in a CVS bag. That was at the scene too, you know.
And that you had noticed on the video.
Yeah. And so I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I went to the chef store and got those big, huge, like 2 gallon size baggies, the Ziploc bags. And I went back and I took pictures of everything and I baggied everything up wearing gloves. Of course, I baggied everything up as evidence. Like this is literally evidence that they should have collected. And yet here I am having to do
all of it,
that job, you know? Yeah, I also found he had a flashlight two that he had left in the store that I had found when I had gone there that same day. So, that, I mean, that's another burglary tool, right? It's a flashlight.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and then when I went into it, we have a garbage enclosure. So we have a recycling and a garbage push thingies, like containers, right?
The and you ones. Said that you have to have them.
Yeah. And so, and we had to, we actually had to build a garbage enclosure, like its own little building and stuff to hold, house our garbage for the store. But I went in there and the tool that he used to break the glass was in the garbage enclosure. So that was another
piece of evidence.
How did he get
into that thing? Is it unlocked?
Well, he didn't. We just have like, there's a gap between the roof and the top of the walls.
And he threw it in there.
And he just threw it in. And you could see in the video too that,
when he did that.
Yeah. And so, so then I call the police and say, hey, you know, I've got all this evidence. I called the officer that showed up that and said that, hey, we have all this evidence and stuff. I need you to come get it. So I've been in talks with the DA. And the last conversation that we had, and this was in November, was the last that I've heard from the DA. He said that he had to confer with a colleague to see if he could proceed with grand jury to charge the guy because he couldn't tell if that was him in the video and the pictures that I sent them. And I'm like, how can you not tell? And so I had sent, I made a document, right, that circled, this is him and this is his shoe that he was wearing. So you could see in the picture, this is his shoe and it's the same
shoe. And then there's
shoe.
The one that you found at the camp.
Exactly.
And honestly, you know, if like, the person was willing, the person who gave you the information could be a witness.
Well,
they
and then
say,
they did.
They can
I told
identify
them,
it.
I told them that the guy got out that same night and they were furious because they're like, what the heck? And so one of them said, you know, I will 100% testify. And they wrote up a little handwritten testimony with, you know, contact stuff. But the reason I'm able to talk about it now is because I have no doubt that this case will go nowhere. And that's why I'm talking
really,
about it now.
Even though there's, even though Nathan Vasquez is head of the DA's office now.
No.
You don't think that'll change anything for this?
No.
Well, no. Because of everything you've seen leading up to this in the past 4 years running this business.
And the reason I'm talking about it and I want to talk about it is because this should not happen.
No, it shouldn't.
To businesses, you know, and it literally is like we're having to do our own work. We lost $8,000 worth of product and damage and loss of business that day.
Remind me, when did this happen?
It was September 27th, I believe, last year.
Of 2024.
Yep.
Relatively recently.
Yep.
And that's just the amount of money you lost in that incident.
Correct.
Of course, there's been a...
Oh, yeah.
This is constant.
Yeah.
And you probably have to build all that in, that loss. And
yeah. So...
Into doing business. Now that's a cost of doing business.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like they always say, oh, you need to include shrinkage, you know, in your budget and stuff. And it's like,
yeah, but I think this is an outsized amount.
Yeah.
Like in most cities, I don't know that it would be this big. I mean, of course you'd have to include crime in your, you'd have to have a loss prevention strategy. You'd have to include crime in your, in the costs that you build in, but this is pretty extreme.
Yeah.
Seems like.
Yeah. So, but now we have shutters. So we've spent quite a bit of money to put the shutters in front of all of our glass. You know, those are like they're electronic kind of like metal blinds.
Metal ones. Yeah.
We didn't want bars because we feel like bars, they look.
They look
horrible.
You know? Yeah, it looks like a crime scene.
And it
almost attracts people. Like it almost dares them to get in between the bars or something.
And
the shutters seem more useful. Have they proved useful? They seem more useful.
We feel more secure, you know, because
nobody's tried to dismantle them, as far as you know, in any successful way.
No. I mean, these are just recent too. Like, we've only had them for like a month and a half.
I know, so, but still, where you are, given the track record at this store, it seems like a good amount of time, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I hope not, because I have videos, like cameras everywhere. So, yeah. Like, and hopefully the police now know to, you know, as they're driving, look. You know, look to see who's hanging out at these businesses that are closed. And that was the thing, too, is like that guy was out in front of our store wearing a high-vis jacket, you know, at 6 something in the morning.
Well, you know, he's still around. And, I mean, you know, he probably hasn't gone anywhere. He's probably still in Portland. He's probably at that same camp.
No, he's not.
Oh, he's not.
No, there's
you've been the there camp. Since.
Oh, yeah. And the camp's gone. So, oh, okay. I mean, people come and go from that particular area and stuff. But
you think he's probably in this city?
Potentially. Well, and that's the other thing, too.
Why wouldn't he be?
The DA.
There's no consequences.
Like,
why wouldn't you? I mean, this is the best place ever for him. Yeah. Why would he go anywhere? Where's he going to go? And where's he going to go? Washington County? Clackamas County? No. That'd be the worst decision he could make.
Yeah. So I really, like, in reading the news and seeing all these businesses that get, you know, their windows busted or even broken
it's
into
constant.
And stuff, you know, it's like,
and that's what
so
we read about.
Feel for him. Yeah. And that's why I have been testifying in front of Multnomah County. And I just recently testified for the new city council last week. That was arduous because we had to wait 6 hours before we could testify. Yeah, it was horrible. But we did. And so there was 3 of us from Stadium Hood that went there to testify. And I just, like, I am almost wanting to go to the state legislature and
you should.
Start testifying.
You should.
I started
because a lot
up.
Of these soft on crime policies come out of our state legislature.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a problem on all levels. It's not just a Multnomah County problem. In a lot of ways, it starts at the state legislature.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I have a lot of ideas.
There's a lot of ground to cover.
How Sadly. We can be better, you know, like how people can do better. And I've just got invited to participate in a committee for, I think it's Multnomah County, for the homeless. So
Good.
Like, yeah, so I'm going to start working on that because
that's great.
Like you know, as far, like, I'm upset at the homeless that steal from us, but there's also good homeless people, you know, that just have bad circumstances.
Of course.
You know, and I feel like
of course that's
the
true.
More that we can help those people help themselves.
Yeah.
So not hand out, you know, but like get them back on their feet, give them jobs. I just found out that there's a house bill that, I just found this out this morning, actually, when I was doing research, but there's a house bill that if you employ a homeless person, that you could write off or not have to pay federal employment taxes for that person. You know,
wow.
And it's like
there's an incentive there.
Yeah. So it's like, why are these things not being utilized
advertised,
or
right.
talked about or whatever, you know what I mean? So
why don't we know more about that?
And I did somewhere I heard that if you house a homeless, like say you have a little tiny home or something like that, or
an
extra
ADU
room
or
whatever.
Yeah.
Or something like that, you know, that if you house them, then there's like some kind of tax incentive or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if they were you know, advertising that more, I think that more people would be like,
for sure,
let's help in that way. Let's help them, but help themselves, you know, make sure that they're, you know, working and all of that stuff, you know, like I've had to work since I was 14, you know? And so I just like
a lot of people have,
you know,
yeah.
And I spoke to a homeless guy the other day, kind of at length, you know, he's a regular customer of ours, super nice guy. And I asked him, like, why are you homeless? You know, like, where did you live before this, right? And so he was telling me his stories. Like, he was in construction. I think he was a forklift driver. And then COVID happened and he lost his job or something. You know, or they laid off a whole bunch of people. And then he just never was able to get another job. And so then he became homeless in like different areas and then eventually came to Portland. And, and I could tell that he's on drugs, but he's like not, he's not like a crazy drug person. Right. And,
like there's a chance there to make some inroads.
Cause I asked him like, if you had an opportunity to work, would you want to work? And he's like, yes, definitely. Definitely. You know? And it's like, so I feel like there's like different groups of these homeless people, you know?
And if he wants to get off drugs, he should be able to do that. But we don't have resources for that either. You know, he'll have to wait.
Well, he said that he had signed up for housing and he was told it's going to take 4 years before he can get into housing. I'm like, what the? That doesn't make sense, you know?
We seem to do nothing but spend money on quote unquote housing.
Well, how can the military buy or build these like pop-up communities in
FEMA, right?
Yeah, in different.
Anytime there's a hurricane,
But we can't do that here.
A natural disaster.
Like,
I heard Jessica Vega Peterson, the chair at Multnomah County, walked your neighborhood because you all were testifying.
Yeah.
So much or so often.
I call her out all the time. Like, yeah. So.
So what came, do you know what came of that or who she met with or talked to?
It's so funny because during that, so we were out there during that walk. I had mentioned to her, I'm like, why are you not opening the emergency shelters? Like, why are they just sitting vacant when, you know, it doesn't matter if it's cold outside or not. People need shelter and you have these shelters. And why are you not opening them? You know, and then a week later, you hear on the news that the mayor and JVP agreed to open these shelters now. You know, so I think she's listening, but you got to say the right thing.
Okay.
You know, she wasn't she. So some people think that she's the one that got the news media out there. It wasn't her. It was us. Because, you know.
You mean when she did the walk of your neighborhood?
When she did
the walk, yeah. Oh, I'm sure she didn't get that out there. That wouldn't have been a good look. So, like these citizens are so beleaguered that they've been talking at me for long enough that I'm finally going to go out here to see if I can shut them up. That's probably not a good feather in your cap, but.
Yeah, I worked with her. I don't know if she's the chief of staff or who she's somebody in her office. She and I coordinated this and we're going to do it again, but also with the commissioner for our area. We're going to have them out there. And then we want to have
Megan Moyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have the city councilors for
for your district, for District 4. I mean, Eric Zimmerman will be. It seems, and Olivia Clark, they should be interested in this.
Yeah.
It seems like. I'm sure Eric is. I'm sure he is.
Well, I mentioned it during my city council testimony, and they were like shaking their heads, you know. So good. I'm like, okay, hopefully that they'll.
Yeah, I bet it's on their radar. That,
you know, and it, because like our group, we have so much potential. We have so much great ideas and we really want to
your stadiumhood group
and we really want to copy what we're doing in other neighborhoods so that they get empowered to you know be voices. And now my goal too is to get the homeless to start speaking at Multnomah County and mostly Multnomah County board meetings and stuff too.
That would be great.
To advocate for themselves.
That would be great.
Because they're not getting the services that Multnomah County is saying that they're getting, you know? And so, like I said, there's people that are on drugs that don't want to do anything. Right. So we need to have something that is going to incentivize them to either leave and go do it somewhere else. Right. Or have consequences for continuing to do what they do, which is the drugs and, you know, And who knows what else? I mean, committing crimes.
Just give him an off ramp, right?
Yeah. And so, but like then
there's
you
a
have
reason
the,
to not do this.
Right. And then you have the people that are mentally ill that are on the drugs. Now, when I was talking to this homeless guy the other day, I told him, like, everybody has a mental illness inside them. Okay. It's everybody does. But not everybody portrays or takes on the mental illness, right? Like something would have to trigger it, you know?
A lot of times it's trauma or genetics.
Exactly. You know, but some of this could be the drugs or, you know, sure. Or being homeless or,
of course.
You know what I mean? And so
being unemployed for a long amount of time, of course.
Exactly.
Of course that's true.
You know, I know that I fall into the depression. Like that is my mental illness. Like I get severely depressed and it takes me a lot to get out of it. And that's why, you know, I'm trying to be an advocate for the community and for Portland and Oregon, you know, in general, like any kind of voice that I can have is kind of like my therapy. And I wish that other people can find, you know, that one thing that's going to like help them get out of that, the mental, you know, the mental illness that they have. And start doing something, you know, to make their life better.
Or some medication or some professional right. So they can get to that point where they could, it's a functional way to live.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but again, you know, I'm going to continue to testify and I want to, I want to empower the homeless to start advocating for themselves too, you know, and become productive members of society, just like we all do, you know, we all have to, you know what I mean? So
Karen, everybody's going to want to know why you're still here, why you're still in Portland, why you're still in business.
I don't want to cry about it, but like, this is my home, you know, it's been my home for years, you know, I left for the military. I was in the military in the army for 3 years, but then I came back and I came back to home, you know, and my family's here and now my husband and I, you know, we have our home and our business and we're trying to get more businesses or, you know, do different things. And so, you know, I don't want to be run out by people that are causing, you know, all these problems, you know, and I want to be a part of the solution. You know it can get better. I know people are like, it's never going to get better, you know, but like, we can't have that attitude, because when we have that attitude, then nothing's going to change. You know what I mean? And as much as that's happened to my husband and I and to our store and my family, you know, we're strong people and we just want to be a part of this community, you know, and we want to be there for whomever needs us to be there. And then that's why I mean, maybe in the future that, you know, when we're ready to retire or something, we might go to a retirement place or something, but actually now we're talking about retiring and opening a restaurant and having like an all you can eat breakfast buffet or something like that, you know, like, or a wedding venue or something.
I love that.
You know, so I don't know. I think we've also talked about starting our own nonprofit. And so that might be here in probably the next year or so. We're starting
our own
nonprofit. Yeah. And potentially like employ some of the homeless to help.
That's
run
a great idea.
The shelter or whatever it is, you know, resource center, or I know my husband wants to have it be kind of like the Portland Rescue Mission where they do the food, you know, handing out the food and stuff. We actually volunteered at a homeless shelter last year. It was every Saturday for, I think, like 10 Saturdays, 8 hours a day at a homeless shelter in Tigard. And that's actually going to be my testimony on Thursday, is that particular organization should be a model for all these other shelters and stuff, because
your testimony at the county.
Yeah. Because what they're doing there is amazing.
What, like, is it called?
It's called Just Compassion. They have two locations, but it actually started with a group of neighbors seeing a homeless issue and then deciding to start, you know, this nonprofit and start housing these people. You know, it's like an overnight shelter. And, but then they also, feed the people, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, and they have like game days, you know, game times, and they can watch TV, and they take them to take showers and do laundry and,
wow,
you know, all that
lot
stuff,
of stuff,
you know, and they each have like a caseworker assigned to them too, you know, to integrate them back into society. And, you know, and that's the other thing too, with this guy that I talked to, he doesn't have a caseworker. I'm like,
yeah,
I would think that when they sign up for any kind of services that they would have some person to kind of like see them through these different processes, you know? And so that's what I think needs to change too. Like they need to have somebody to go to say, hey, I need help with my food stamps. For some reason they stopped, you know, or, hey, I'm trying to get into this shelter, but I know I can't get in. They need to have somebody to go to say, like, advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
Because these people, they don't have laptops.
Yeah.
You know, some of them don't have cell phones or anything, you know.
And so, did you hear anything from Jessica Vega Peterson from the chair of Multnomah County after she walked your neighborhood?
No. It was,
or anything from her staff or any response about, wow, we saw this and we
recognized this. I did hear from Natalie, the lady that helped get this set up, and she's emailed me a couple times, and she comes to our Monday, every other Monday meeting with the city. Yeah. So
you have an every other, so Stadium Hood, the people that are part of the Stadium Hood neighborhood organization have a meeting every other Monday with the city.
Yeah.
Who from the city?
So it's PMO.
What's PMO?
Portland Emergency Management, something or
okay.
Other. And then it's police. So we have one rep from the police.
Great.
We have someone from graffiti, someone from
amazing.
The garbage.
How did you get all that set up?
So, well, it started, back, for me, it started back in September of 23. One of our customers was talking about this meeting, right? And I'm like, well, I want to be involved.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and I don't know.
And it was a meeting between your people in your neighborhood and these groups at the city?
Yes.
Organizations?
They started these Zoom meetings. And so.
Zoom meetings. Okay.
Yeah. So I started back in September of 23, attending these meetings and speaking and stuff. And then some of the other people in our Stadium Hood joined as time went on, right? Yeah. They started joining the meeting too.
Okay.
And because like when we'd go out on patrol, we'd see other people going out on patrol, like litter patrol or security patrol or whatever. Right. And so then they started joining. And then, so now we have a core group that started Stadium Hood.
That's amazing that this has been going on for that long and you're not getting responses from the city.
So, well, the city is doing, like, they're helping with lighting and graffiti and the garbage and all that. So
you've gotten more lighting?
Yes.
Okay. And they've been doing, for how long have they been helping you?
Well, since September
2023.
Me, anyway. Like, I think the original two, they had started before me, but I don't know when they had started.
The original two people from the neighborhood group?
Yeah. And there are two people that literally live on the street that my store is on.
Okay.
Like behind Fred Meyer's. And so, and there was a couple of other people, but I think they since, those other people that were involved have since kind of like went away. And then we started getting the people that are like around McDonald's and Trinity. They started becoming involved, and now we have even more people, and now we have a website.
Yes.
You know, and so people can sign up to join our website. And now we meet every Saturday at 1 on Zoom.
Oh, that's great.
And have our own little meeting so that we know what people are working on and then also what people are going to be testifying about. And then we
so
can,
smart.
Like, coordinate different things, you know. And I love being a part of this group. These people are, like, they're amazing. Like, we all have certain talents, you know. And so bringing that together in a coordinated effort to make our community better is just, it's amazing, you know.
Can anybody sign up for this? Like, let's say somebody is listening to this from a different neighborhood and they're thinking, I would really like to put something like that together. Can they go to your website and sign up or contact somebody and just say, hey, is there anybody I can talk to about what I can do in my neighborhood so I can learn from what you're doing?
So just recently, one of our group members reached out to the North Portland Neighborhood Association. And so we're trying to get them to coordinate with us and kind of like start their own thing too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, so people can sign up. We, for a while, we were vetting people.
Sure.
To make sure that we weren't getting, you know, like, we understand there's people out there that, you know, support the homeless, and not that we don't support the homeless.
Yeah, I feel like everything you've said about it has been very supportive. And technically, you could say your husband was homeless since he lived in his car.
Yeah. Yep. And so anyway, my husband, he's had quite the life. Like, he came here when he was 2 from Peru. And so his family, they lived in California, and he was homeless and very, very poor all his life. And so when he came up here, he basically worked minimum wage jobs. And then he had a motorcycle accident where he basically almost broke his foot off.
Oh my gosh.
And had to have surgery. And so at that point, he ended up going to college and getting his welding certification. And then that's when he started the construction thing. But prior to that, like I said, he was just doing minimum wage jobs, and he had I don't know if I could say that, like, he has a baby mama. And so he and this gal had a child together. And so he was supporting.
That's a burden. It's a big burden. Yeah. I mean, it's a blessing, but it's a lot of responsibility.
Literally supporting, you know, a family of 4 on minimum wage, but he did it, you know.
He ended up having 2 kids?
Well, no, she already had a kid.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But
he was pitching in on that.
Yeah. But they
Which
were,
is amazing.
Yeah.
It's like, really, obviously he didn't have to do that. Yeah. It's really amazing.
And then, like I said, they, you know, he just scrimped and saved and, you know, was able to pay for his things. And then they split up, and then he basically was just sleeping in his car and Ubering and working the construction job and donating plasma, you know, to
facilitate the stream of owning a convenience store.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like the American dream story. It really is.
Well, I mean, he's an inspiration. He really
is,
you know, because, like,
he absolutely is.
If he can do it, literally anybody can do it, you know? And I wish that he would tell his story more.
It's an incredible story.
Yep. Yep. And so, yeah. And he's so intelligent too. Like, we're getting into real estate now too.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And so we partnered up with a guy that he works with and for our real estate business, and already bought our first property.
Congratulations.
That we're leasing. Yeah. And then now we're going to be buying a restaurant.
Oh. Wow.
That has like a little apartment on the top of the restaurant and stuff too, and potentially turning that into like a wedding venue.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's smart.
Or we're going to lease it to
rental or something.
Yeah. And, but anyway, but I mean, like an immigrant, you know, very poor person and the single parent literally for 30 plus years, you know, like if we could do it, anybody can do it, you know, and just.
But you're doing it. What's interesting to me is you think the city would want to encourage this.
Exactly.
Because your husband is the kind of person that the city says they care the most about.
Yep, the BIPOCs. It's a
diverse first generation.
Yeah, I'm a veteran.
Immigrant. You're a veteran.
Yeah.
You're a single mother. Were.
Yeah.
You're coming here. You're here in Portland wanting to build something. And you think there'd be a lot of support for that.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't get a welcome wagon saying, oh, thank you so much for opening your business.
But it's so much worse. It's almost like oppressive for you to operate. Like it's so much worse than, oh, we didn't get help starting out. It's like you're here, you're successful, you're doing things, and now you just need some help. You know, you just need a return. You need some services back, or like just crime prevention or some strategies or consequences for crime, actually. Some help back for your tax money that you think you just get living in a city.
Yeah.
You know, just some services.
So, well, we did when we had our last burglary, there's a program called Prosper Portland.
Yeah.
And it's a grant program. So if you have, you know, something that you get damaged or whatever, you know, you can apply for this grant. And I did, I applied for it, and we did get monies recently from that. So that helped with the burglary cost.
Good.
But
that's good to hear.
But they closed it December 31st.
That program?
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if they're opening it up again or they ran out of funds or something. Yeah. Cause like I said, I see all these, you know, news about these businesses being broken into and stuff. And it's like,
it's constant,
you know, but I wouldn't have heard about that program unless I was involved in these every other Monday meetings with the city.
Yeah.
That's how I heard about it. But like, I feel like if I weren't involved in that, nobody would come to my business and say, hey, just to let you know, I heard about your burglary and, you know,
there's no advertisement of it.
Yeah. And so
I think most people didn't know about it. I guess it doesn't exist now, but didn't know about it.
Yeah. And so it's like, why are we not communicating these things to help these businesses? Because the more businesses they're closed, the more people are going to be unemployed.
That's right.
And they're going to become homeless, and they're not going to, you know, the people that
or
do have
or,
yeah the people that do have jobs, you know,
mental illness
aren't going to be able to shop in these places anymore, you know what I mean? It's like,
yes, I do know what you mean.
And so like I really feel like they're not thinking about that. The city and the county are not thinking about the consequences the businesses closing down. Like we literally have 12 businesses in just our little area within like a half a mile that have closed and have not reopened, you know? And it's like,
it's a lot.
That's a lot for one area, a lot, you know, and more closing.
Yeah.
Too,
all the time.
You know?
Right.
And so like, how can we bring more businesses to open? You know, one is quit charging us so much money to open our business. Like it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot for permits. It's a lot for zoning. You know, it's a lot for taxes, you know. like, that's my going to be one of my next testimonies too, is I'm mapping stadiumhood, right? Well, we already have a map, right? But within that map, I want to go to each property and figure out how much they pay in taxes. And so with that accumulative tax monies for just our little area, what are we getting for that?
That's a good idea.
You know, like,
it's going to be an astronomical number.
Yeah. So, and like, well, let me have that money and I can budget for whatever services that we need for just our little area. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's much.
So no, like I testified to that, you know, while we're low on police, I'm sorry, my voice, while we're short-staffed on police right now, why don't we supplement that with security? But why are they asking us businesses to pay for security? I just found out one security company wants to charge.
They're expensive.
$75 an hour to stay inside our store.
I believe that.
And I'm like, I don't even get $75 an hour for my pay. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You own it.
Yeah. It's like, no, there's no way. And I asked for a veteran's discount so I could save $2 an hour, you know? But it's like, I can't believe that there's other businesses that are buying into this security, you know? And it, but it, like, does it really help? That, because the people, you know, even if they detain the person that supposedly did a crime, they're not going to go to jail because there's nowhere for them to go. So they're just going to be back out and then do the same thing over again. So I just wasted my money, you know, doing that. So, you know, and there's like a tipping point, I feel, with business owners and citizens. They get so upset at everything that's happening that they're going to take matters into their own hand. And I don't want it to get that far, you know, like, I don't want anyone that, you know, is abiding by the law to break the law because somebody else did, you know what I mean? Because it's a horrible situation to be in, you know? And so that's why I just, the more I can testify, the more I can bring up these issues, the more I can be involved in any kind of committee or whatever to, you know, spark these ideas to make our city better.
Thank you.
I'm going to do that.
Thank you for doing that.
So.
Karen, thank you for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's going to inspire a lot of people and give them some hope.
I love hearing, regardless if they're like negative comments, I love when people comment on any kind of like news article or some situation and stuff, because there's always going to be like the naysayers and you can't do that, you know, and then there's going to be the people like, oh, they're not going to listen to you, you know, or nothing's going to change. And, but you know what, one day it's going to change and then we're going to say, told you so. Because it will. We're going to make it change. And I think that if we do it together, then as a strong community together against our government saying that, no, you guys need to start making, you know, different choices and start managing our monies better. I just don't understand how can we be under budget. I don't understand that. Like, I have to manage my budget, right, for my personal life and my store. So it's like, how can these big, huge organizations be so under budget? That's what I'm going to find out next.
Thank you for your work and thank you for coming on and telling us about this.
Well, thank you again for having me.
I'm going to put a link to, I did this on the Pete Colt episode, but I'll also put a link to the Stadiumhood website and other resources like that in the show notes so people know where to go and so people have some idea of who to talk to if they want to do this in their own neighborhood or if they live around there and they're inspired to get involved.
Yeah, definitely contact us because we can get them set up to, you know, start their own meetings and all that.
Sounds
and then
like
testifying.
And you, this is a very organized group. I mean, it's very impressive.
Thank you.
The way you've set it up. So people shouldn't feel like they have to reinvent the wheel here. There are resources to learn about how to do this.
Yeah.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.